and listeners for nearly $1 out of every $2 it spends to bring you programs. Please help build its base of supporters to ensure the detailed analysis and objective reporting you want from WILL is there when you turn to us. If you've received a letter requesting an additional gift to build a member match fund, please mail your check today or give online at willpledge.org. Thank you.
Programs on WILL are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, celebrating the 75th anniversary of the College of Fine and Applied Arts with performances of Beth Amsbury's Bones of the Building and Leonard Bernstein's Mass. More information is available at krannertcenter.com. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Owens Funeral Home at the corner of Elm and University in Champaign, locally owned and operated and serving families since 1925. The staff at Owens Funeral Home invite you to join them in supporting public radio.
You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for joining us today. Dog trainers Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel are with us this afternoon. It's the first Friday of the month, the day of the month we talk about dogs. Jim and Carol are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and they join us once a month to talk about dogs, to talk about dog care, behavior, and training. They're happy to take your telephone calls this afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, the number, that's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Jim and his wife Robin raise Malamutes, and Carol has a golden, and you're going to have to tell me again.
Golden doodle.
A golden doodle.
A dude.
But it's a she-dude.
Named Andy. Yeah, she's a she-dude.
A she-dude.
And so, it's a beautiful afternoon for them.
I guess.
Yeah. I think they'll be outside for a bit.
And one of these days very soon, it sounds like your dogs will be happy and
still
cool.
A little warm for them.
Yeah. You know? But Mike Sola was saying today that come next weekend could be quite chilly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I missed him.
Yeah.
Don't say the frost word, please. Oh, no. God. You know, I know it's going to happen every year. And it always happens about the same time. And at the last minute, I'm running around putting my plants in the garage because I guess it'd just be denial. I just can't believe it's going to get that cold.
Yeah, it's coming.
The rats.
I'm looking forward to it.
Not me.
Jim likes snow, even.
I love snow. Snow is your friend.
He likes it because he does things in it.
Yeah.
I don't.
I make snow angels.
The dogs love it. The males love it.
You know, what's strange is it, or nice to see when a puppy who's born in the summer or sometime, when they first see snow.
That is the most fun thing on the planet.
Look at all the white snow.
They
run around and roll in it, and they just have a lot of fun.
Yeah. Now, the dog that I grew up with, she would tippy-toe through it. She wasn't a real big fan of it.
Yeah, mine always loved the snow, but, the first one's okay, you know, the second one's all right, but that's about it.
Yeah. Well, I think we've got a listener already waiting to talk with the two of you this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. Jim Carroll and Carol Lindholm are guests this afternoon. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. Listener on line one. Good afternoon.
Oh, hi. I have a question. I have a Pomeranian, and I read recently that Pomeranians are not supposed to be clipped, and I have routinely clipped her in the summertime. She likes being clipped. She seems awfully hot when I don't clip her. Why are you not supposed to clip Pomeranians?
I'll take that one.
Go for it, Jim.
For years, I was kind of biased, and people will shave or clip Malamutes, people, and I was always kind of opposed to that.
Same with Goldens.
Well, there's a type of Malamute coat that's like a collie coat. It's not, it's a fault, but you'll run into them from time to time. And people who aren't, you know, sledding or showing or anything, have the dog as a pet, and this coat is hard to maintain. And should we clip it? Oh, no, it's terrible. It's pure dog. You can't do it. What you have to understand is clipping the coat isn't really going to make the dog that much cooler. Their cooling system isn't the same as ours. We use pores and sweating and things like that. Dogs don't have that. Their cooling system is 99% through their lungs and through their mouth. So when you cut the coat, you may increase a little bit of the radiant heat, but that's not the main way they keep cool. You also have to be careful not to shave the dog, and I don't think you are, but they need a little bit of coat because their skin isn't like ours. It doesn't have the protection against the sun's rays that we have. Because they do have protection, I should say, but it's in the form of a coat. And if you take that away, they don't have anything. So if you clip it down a little bit but leave some there, you know, covering the skin, I couldn't say that that's bad. Now, I'm no expert on Pomeranians and why Pom people might say you shouldn't clip the dog. I think it's more general, you shouldn't clip a dog's coat than it is specific
to
Poms.
Well, I think that it's because they're a coated breed. People with coated breeds like the breed because of its coat. They'd be the purists. But it's your dog. I mean, you can do whatever you want. If the dog
seems she's not a show dog.
Well, I don't think it's going to hurt the dog unless you get down to the skin. So you want to be careful about that.
It's easier maintenance if the coat's shorter.
It's much easier, yeah. Even though
it's real cute when she's clipped.
Well, aesthetics, you know, it's better to look good than to feel good. So if... And you look marvelous.
See, I just, when people, and they'll shave down their goldens or clip them real short, and it just makes me cringe because I like the breed because of their coat. But that's me.
Well, yeah.
And I wouldn't do it to my own because I don't like the appearance of it, and I don't allow them to get so uncomfortable because it's so hot.
The problem is the reverse is true. The coat does, it helps to keep the sun and heat off of the skin in the summer, but it also does help to keep maybe not the body warm, but their skin layer warm. Okay. So if the coat grows back by winter, then that would be fine. But that is some protection against the cold.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I let her grow it in the winter. I just clip it in the summer.
Yeah.
Sure.
You might have seen something. It might have been from Pomeranian people. Generally, it's not a good idea to clip the coat. But as I said, as I've gotten older, what's the problem?
If it
makes it easier to deal with the dog, then why not?
When boys always got crew cuts in the summer,
I did.
I mean, how weird is that?
Then you got a sunburn on the top of your head.
What does it make them? Were you cooler in the summer when you had
my head got sunburned.
Yeah, but it's I remember that, and I thought, God, that was a weird thing to do, but. It's your dog.
So
you
then
can do
you'd
what
have
you
to
want.
Work. Yeah, I don't think clipping the coat is not going to hurt the dog.
Okay.
It may marginally help the dog. And if you observe that it's a little bit cooler and a little bit more comfortable, then fine.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. Other calls are invited, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL, 333-WILL. No one waiting at the moment, so let's talk about what's coming up this fall with the Dog Training Club.
I got something coming up this fall in 2 weeks from today, but it's not the Dog Training Club.
Okay.
It's the Humane Society.
All right.
And it's our 7th annual, our biggest fundraiser. And this year we've revamped the event. We've renamed the event. And it's called Cold Noses, Warm Hearts. We have a big billboard up at St. Mary's Road in Neal. Beautiful billboard. Jim, you're going. You and Robin are going. You received a special invitation.
You'd have to ask Robin about that.
I just put him on the spot. I knew
Robin
is
my social coordinator, so she tells me where I'm going and when.
But it's just going to be, and this year's event, we've chosen to take the opportunity to honor Dr. Leroy Neitzel as our Humanitarian of the Year. And Leroy was a very highly esteemed veterinarian in the area for many, many years, and he's been active.
Now, not so much.
But now
Right.
He still is esteemed, practicing.
Just being
But
funny.
He also spends a great deal of time at the shelter, and he had served as president for excess of 20
years. Yeah.
And we're also honoring Hawthorne Suite as our business of the year for
We are going to that event.
See? Now, why did you not? Why were you just being cute when I asked you the first time?
I didn't know the name of it. I thought it was something else.
Okay. It's going to be a great event. And if you would like to come, all you have to do is call the shelter at 344-PAWS and ask for an invitation to be sent to you. I'm really looking forward to
it. That spells pause, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's going to be a great event, and it is October 20th.
Okay. Is it a black tie event, or do you just...
We have a development committee, and we spent a pitiful amount of hours discussing attire. I mean, it was pitiful, but we chose to say black tie optional, warm hearts required.
Okay. Cold noses, warm hearts.
Do we have
hearts.
An invitation?
I don't know.
Well, I just have one right here. Okay. I keep a quantity in my purse. I think I depleted my supply last night.
Very personal, yeah. I got one right here.
I was passing out invitations
corner?
Last night was Aski Bow Wow, which was a first-time event for the... It was so much fun. First-time event for the grief hotline at the University of Vet Med. And it was a marvelous event, and it was hosted by Webster White and his brother Ben. And it was just a lovely evening. It really was. So I was handing out invitations last night there, too.
Okay. So I'll look for one.
I will run down to the car and bring one up after the show.
Okay, very good. Well, what else is happening? What's happening at the shelter? I think October, isn't October? Adopt a companion animal.
Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, we're about ready. And Celeste, this will interest you. We have now two additional community cat rooms. So all of our adoptable cats will be in a community setting. We'll have four community cat rooms, and they'll have couches and furniture in them. Litter pans, feed pans, water, toys, a more natural setting for a cat to live in while it's waiting for its home. It's a great opportunity for people to go in there and see the cats and interact with them. They're no longer in a cage. And we were able to achieve these two community cat rooms, the addition ones, through a grant from PetSmart, for which we're very grateful.
Okay.
So those are about ready to open. I know the doors are being put on this weekend. So.
Okay. How did you find space for that?
We had a very large room. It used to be our conference room out there years ago.
A conference room was a conference room 1 month.
It didn't last very long.
We had one meeting, and then it was taken
It was
over.
Our conference room and library, and it was a very large room. And then that eventually we renamed it Kitty City, and it was full
Kitty
of—
Kitty City.
Yeah, Kitty City. And it had— they were all—
You guys are just
candies.
Terminally cute, aren't you?
Yeah, I know. I can't help it.
It's her warm heart.
But we had cat cages all in that room and stacked, and seeing a cat in a cage is fine for viewing, but it's not a normal environment for a cat to live in. It's just not. And then we found that, you know, pairing the cats up putting the big Tokyo cages so you could have several cats in a cage.
Mm-hmm.
That was, you know, another form of enrichment. But actually the best thing to do is to give them an actual living environment. So we took Kitty City and divided it in two and built two rooms out of it, which doesn't sound like it's very large, but it's larger than you would think. So
okay. Well, there, when I adopted our cat, there were so many cats. So
oh, it's a
great cats.
There are wonderful
cats.
So if
cats. People are listening out there, you might want to, you know, think about it.
Oh, yeah. And then we have our Senior for Senior program. After you reach a certain age, you can adopt, it's age 55, which I don't really consider senior.
No.
Absolutely not.
No, we're all in agreement on that, aren't
yeah,
we?
Okay.
We were very generous that night we made that decision.
55, that's the new 25, isn't
that's
it?
That's right. And then the cat, any cat 8 years of age or older, and then it's a free adoption.
Yeah, and the older cats are wonderful.
Cats live for 20 or more years. I mean, a cat at 8 years old is just, you know, not middle-aged. It's no longer a youngster.
8 is the new 2, then.
I think that's
there you
right.
go.
Okay.
We have another program, the Garbo Fund, and that would adopting one cat, and if you adopt another, the adoption fee for the second is waived. But the problem is, there's too many cats.
Yeah,
there are just too many cats out there.
I think in the United States, I read that there are 30 million cats in households. So I don't know if that. I think that's the number.
And they're the lucky ones. Yeah. It's got to be 100 million that don't have a home. And, you know, you can have all the schemes you want to get cats into homes. But when the supply exceeds the demand, you've got a problem. And it's either spay-neuter is an option, but we get a lot of adult cats that are relinquished. Behavior problems, litter box issues. And we've got people in our community that are trained to help you work through these issues so you keep your cat. But it's just, you know,
the
it's
same
not
thing
us,
happens
you know.
With dogs.
Oh, sure. Get some
where
lovely
training
dogs.
Comes in where it's so important.
Yeah, it's critical. But, and it's hard for me, and I know hard for Jim and hard for you as animal lovers to even think about giving up an animal because it no longer meets some criteria that you set that's impossible, or that you don't have the time or the energy or the desire to do anything with it. It's hard for me to grasp that, but situations for people are different. But the cat issue is a problem in every community in the country. It's not just here. Yeah. It's everywhere.
Where do we stand in terms of education efforts then in spay-neuter?
Spay-neuter, well, you know, we don't have the problem with the surplus of dogs that we once did because the dog people spay and neuter. All animals that are adopted have to be spayed and neutered, but it's those litters out there that keep being born and they don't bring the mother in or they don't bring the stray tom in and have it neutered, and there's low-cost spay-neuter clinics available. It's just, well, it requires effort on people's part. Hmm. The education piece, it's there. I don't know. Jump in, Jim.
Well, 10,000 years ago, cats reproduced at the same rate, probably. It's just that they died off so quickly. Now, with medicine and improved food and everything, a litter of kittens, if they're six or eight, they'll all live.
And for 20 years.
For 20 years. And I think one mother cat can produce, if not controlled, probably three litters a year easily.
Of six to eight kittens.
So you're looking at one cat and one male and female pair can turn out 20 new cats a year. And
they in turn will...
So you can do the math. Nature isn't keeping this in balance anymore. And with dogs are easier to spot. They're big, you know, and... if they're wandering around the neighborhood, people...
And you never see dogs wandering anymore. You never see that.
But cats are stealthy, and when they wander around the neighborhood, they go under the plants, and so they're a lot harder to spot if they're loose. And, you know, they kill mice and spiders and things. And rarely, I don't want to say never, but the cat bite incidents are a lot smaller than dog bite incidents. So, plus cats are... I don't want to say smarter than dogs, but they can live on their own a lot easier than a dog can. So feral dogs don't make it.
I just read a fascinating article about feral dogs. It was really a good story, but it has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
And feral dogs are a lot easier to spot, too. Mm-hmm. If they cause a problem, it's easier to spot the problem and that sort of thing, whereas feral cats... probably just endanger wildlife.
And we're not even talking about feral cats. You're talking about owned cats that are intact.
That are wandering, right. A feral cat is an unowned wild cat.
An owned cat that is intact. Well, I heard it in my own neighborhood the other morning. I heard a cat fight, and there's nothing worse than listening to that. And
never try to break them up.
No.
Don't stick your hand in there.
But, you know, you can, and I might be in the minority on this, but I'm sometimes thinking that we have saturated the cat-owning population, that they have all the cats that they want. They may have one, they may have five, And, you know, how do we reach more homes that don't, you know, they don't wake up one day and go, gosh, I don't have a cat. I didn't realize I was missing a cat. So you've got a finite number of homes out there for an infinite number of cats. And to me, that's the problem. I don't know how to solve it. I don't know if anybody does. That doesn't mean we shouldn't attempt to do it, but there's just not enough homes for all the cats that need a home. So sure, we can have a cat at the shelter for a year or 2 years, but what is that? That's not, I don't think that's a solution.
Yeah.
So, and we're just one shelter among tens of thousands with the same problem. Dogs come and go. Puppies fly out the door. Our dog population turns over very rapidly. Kittens go very quickly. Mm-hmm. But once you get past that six-month age of a cat, then they can be there
tougher.
For quite a while. Yeah.
Well, our guy's five. He's a great guy.
Yeah. And the cat that was on TV last night, a nine-year-old cat, beautiful cat. But not many people are in the market for a nine-year-old cat, much as they're not in the market for a 10-year-old dog. So.
Yeah. But I don't
and
know.
They still make wonderful pets.
They do.
Wonderful
they do.
Pets.
You're going to have, 10, 11, 15 years?
Sure. Easily. Still. I mean, and Jim's right. I mean, it's not just medicine. It's food. It's care. It's people are more educated about how to care for an animal. But you have a cat that lives outside, you're not going to have a 20-year-old cat. Mm. So they shouldn't be outside. They should be in the house with you. And that's just how I feel about it.
Do you have any cats?
Not now.
Oh.
Shelley was 19, almost 20 when she died, and I loved that cat. And she was just a domestic long-haired tabby, and I could go in the shelter any day and I'd see one that looked like her. But I just didn't want to replace her, so I don't have a cat now. Mm. Just two dogs.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm one of those people that one day may wake up and go, gosh, I didn't get a cat.
Well,
yesterday.
Harriet Weatherford was here some time ago.
A year ago.
She advised me, you know, she said when it's time, when you're ready to adopt another cat, she said, think about getting a cat that doesn't look anything like
what you had.
The cat that I lost.
Yeah.
So, and that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I wouldn't ever try and think I was replacing.
No, but I was weird about that, and I knew better.
Yeah.
But I just had a real
personalities
rapport with that cat.
So different.
Yeah.
As dogs are, too, even within the breed.
Yeah, and I really love Shelley, and I was devastated when I lost her. But I just, you know, I didn't want another cat at that point in time. And she's been gone about 6 or 7 years. Mm. And I'll go to the shelter, and I'll see a cat, and I'll really like it. And I'll think, oh, you know, if I really like this cat, somebody else is going to, too, and they'll give it a home, and it'll be fine. And that's what you do when when you're heavily involved with the shelter. You know, you can't. People say, I can't go out there and bring them all home. Well, no, you can't because, number one, we wouldn't let you. And number two, you know, common sense intervenes. You can't take home 20 dogs. You may want to, but you can't. So you go out there and you know that logically and dispassionately that this animal is going to get a good home. You're not the only good home in this community. So, right, Jim?
Absolutely, 100%. I'm sorry, what did you say? I was thinking about dogs and not cats.
Dogs. Yeah,
dogs.
Let's get back to
canines.
Dogs.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons that dogs are relinquished is because of behavior problems.
That's the number one reason.
Number one reason, okay. So,
and it's not necessarily bad behavior.
Okay.
I've always said if a dog bites the kids,
it's dog
they're,
behavior.
They're forgiven fairly quickly, but if they poop on the rug, they're dead.
Well,
he's not too far from the truth on
I'm
that.
No, very close to the truth.
Well, this is where, you know, the training club comes in and other dog trainers come into the picture. This is a way for you to, well, often the two of you say what dog training is about is not really so much training dogs.
No, it's training
it's
people.
It's training people.
It's training people. That's why it's nice to get, you know, because I love teaching classes and because I like the people and I like the dogs and I like to see the progress they make. I like to see the, you know, when they slip a little bit and then they renew their efforts and how pleased they are when the dog. I had a girl, I've got a great class right now he's the cutest little guy. He wouldn't lay down. He would not lay down. And she was getting frustrated because he knows how to lay down, but he wouldn't do it when she asked him. So I sat on the floor with her, and we just practiced. Oh, it must have been 25 times. I'd ask him to lie down, and he'd get close, and we'd start again. And it's, you know, I taught her how to be patient. I didn't teach him to lie down. I taught her how to be patient until we got him to lie down. And now he's doing it and everything's fine. But, you know, it just takes, I don't know.
I don't know. People think that dog training is so much easier than training kids, for example. You say, well, how do I get the dog not to jump on me? Well, pat yourself on the head 3 times and turn around. And there's no quick solution to that.
Quick. Yeah, nothing's quick. So you just, you know, you have to be patient and work with them and help them see success when it's there, because sometimes they're not seeing it. You know, it's really hard to teach people to recognize that they're making some progress, because their progress is like a mile down the road. So they want the dog not to pull, but they don't recognize those little tiny milliseconds when the dog is not pulling, and they don't, you know, they just want it.
That's when you've got to reward.
That's when you've got to reward that small, tiny behavior right then and there. And it takes some skill. I mean, I'm not skilled at it. I can see when people don't do it. I don't recognize necessarily when I don't do it. So last week I had the tunnel out and I was using.
I have the class right next in the next ring to hers, so I watch.
Yeah, he was class. Imitating me last week. So anyway.
I was making fun of
him. He was making fun of me. I had the tunnel out, the tunnel that they run through. It's an agility thing, and dogs love doing this, and it's a big confidence builder. Well, Andy loves the tunnel. And foolishly, you know, of course, then I couldn't stop. I got her out to. I was doing about turns.
Andy is your doodle dog.
My doodle. And Andy is not a well-trained dog by any stretch of the imagination. So when I use her as a demo dog, it's effective because she's learning at the same time. At any rate, I was trying to demonstrate about turns and controlled walking right next to the tunnel. And I realized, oh, well, this was just too much, because she wanted to play in the tunnel. She'd watched all the other dogs do it. She wanted to go play in the tunnel. And I wanted to use her to demonstrate something that I was trying to teach. So, and I said, well, here's an exercise in frustration. I can see the situation that I've set up here for her. So sometimes people have to, if they see that thing, they're trying to achieve something and they've got a distraction that's so great, they'll never be able to achieve what they want. So you have to look at the whole picture. So I got her to do what I wanted, then I let her go through the tunnel.
Yeah.
So everybody was happy. It worked.
Listeners, if you've got questions about dogs' behavior, training, dog care, give us a call this afternoon. Jim and Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. They join us once a month on the first Friday of the month to talk about dogs. Here are the phone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. So what's the first course that people should think about?
Puppy class.
Puppy class. Okay, what if they don't have a puppy?
Well, that's, you know, a lot of people, we have Home Companion, and that's for all dogs 6 months of age and older. And that class, it's sometimes not so much what they learn to do with their dog, it's how much they learn to enjoy what their dog can do with them. I get a lot of first-time dog owners that are really pretty clueless about the dog's behavior or what their expectations are, and helping them make some progress. I like that. But Home Companion is our most popular class. We offer 5 of those each session, and they fill. And I think I've got 12 or 13 dogs in mine.
You've got a whole lot of dogs.
I got the mutant class. I've got a Great Dane. I got a Mastiff. I got a Newfoundland. I've got...
Wow.
They're huge. I got the huge dog class. But, yeah, so you have maybe average of 10 to 12 dogs in each class. That's 60 dogs approximately that are going through there each session. It's by far the most popular class.
Are there members of the club who turn to other trainers, work with other trainers, but then are also, they are members of the club for the socialization?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, many. Yeah.
Many.
In fact,
okay.
We invite...
So the club is not just about classes.
We try to invite outside trainers of one kind or another to come maybe once a year, twice a year, to give us their
their expertise
techniques and how, how they do it.
Oh, yeah, and then we've got our agility people that go to seminars.
Yeah,
and,
I'm including everybody.
Everybody. Yeah. Everybody in their own little, if they have a special niche, then they go to training.
Okay.
You have to.
So if your dog isn't in need of training at the moment, say, they're still welcome to come out and be part of the club.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a great place.
I
really like it.
Let's talk with another listener.
Ooh, here we go.
Listener calling in on a cell phone, line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hi. I have a 2-year-old standard poodle that I would like to teach how to speak. And she's been through lots of classes. She's been through puppy training and lots and lots of classes. And the trainer suggested that I put food or a treat in front of her nose until she barks. And then when she barks, I say speak and give her the treat. However, my lovely dog is so patient, I can sit there for a half an hour with the treat in front of her face, and she doesn't bark. So how do you suggest I teach her to speak?
For how long have we been doing this? 20 years on the radio? You're the first person that asks, how do I get my dog to bark? Normally, it's, how can I shut my dog up? That's a real problem because... Normally, when you're training a dog to do something, there are several ways of training them. One is to wait until they do the behavior you're looking for and then reward them. That can be very time-consuming. If you're teaching a dog to sit, for example, you can kind of push their butt down a little bit.
Yeah, we've been through that.
Yeah, and they get the idea, oh, you want me to sit, you know, and then you can reward them. Getting them to bark, though, is... You know, what do you do to get a dog to bark? You could kick them, I suppose, and maybe
No.
So how do you get them to bark? If the dog is patient, then you have a problem because what the technique that you use on this is they bark, you reward them.
Uh-huh.
If the dog isn't barking in the first place and never barks, how do you get them to do it? I don't know.
I did it.
You did. I'm sorry.
I did.
I just wanted to talk.
Because I was monopolizing earlier, and he doesn't like that.
Yeah, no.
I taught Tracy to speak.
Okay.
But here was the trick. She would bark when the doorbell rang. So if your dog doesn't bark when the doorbell rings, you have to find another stimulus. But she'd bark at the doorbell, so I would just ring the doorbell. She'd bark. I'd say speak at the same time, give her a treat, and that was it.
Does your dog bark at any particular time? Or
she barks when she wants to go out.
Well, there you go.
Excellent.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. When you want to associate that barking in the dog's mind with some sort of command, and usually we say speak. We use the word speak not because the dog understands, oh, speak means bark, but because we understand it. Mm-hmm. And we don't have to struggle. What word was I using to train this? So pretend you're going to let her out or wait till she wants to go out. She'll start barking, and you go, oh, good dog, here. The problem with this is that the dog is doing several behaviors at that time and won't exactly know which behavior she's being rewarded for. However, keep it up. You know, say speak as she's barking. In other words, you're not telling her to speak to get her to bark. You're telling her speak so she'll associate her barking that she's already doing with that word.
Okay.
All right. But I wouldn't just sit there waiting for her to, you know, as Carol indicated, if she's quiet, you probably have already trained her to be quiet and patient, and you've been successful. And if you wanted her to be quiet and patient and now you wanted her to speak, she would think you're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But if she barks when you go to take her out or at any other time, say speak, give her the food, speak, give her the food, or whatever.
She's probably going to say, no, I want to go out.
Yeah, you don't seem to understand.
You are dense.
Well, in that case, letting her out is actually the reward.
Yes.
So you can say speak.
Oh, there you go, yeah.
And don't let her out until she barks. And then as soon as she barks, let her out.
Okay.
That works pretty well. Like with puppies, we've got puppies as usual, and they're about 5 months old now, and they tend to jump. So I just for example, I'll have cookies, and I just say sit, and I don't say anything else, and I just wait. And they go through all kinds of behaviors trying to figure out how they can get the cookie, and finally they sit, and then I give it to them. Whatever the reward is for the dog, if it's barking to go out, say, speak, as she's barking, and then let her out early on, and then say speak before before she speaks, and say speak, and then as soon as she does, let her out.
Okay.
That kind of stuff. But you have to have something where she will initiate the barking, because you cannot, except by being mean, which we don't want you to do.
She might bark at a doorbell. You never know.
Yeah. Or she might, you know, maybe a picture of Carol would set her off. But
he's not being nice to me today.
Something that gets her going, and then you reward it.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Give us a call maybe next month.
And yeah, I'd love to hear her success.
Let's take another call now. Listener in Champaign on line two. Hi.
Hi. I have a question for either of your guests. I have a plan, and I want you to tell me if it's a good one. Right now, I have a dog that I adopted years ago from the Humane Society. This little guy is now 19 years old, and I know I'm not going to have him forever, but I don't want to ever be dogless. So my plan is, if I ever see his health deteriorating to the point where I know that day is coming, if you know what I mean, I want to go back out to the Humane Society and find another companion and introduce him into my household, him, her, whatever, while I still have the old dog. And so that, you know, I become accustomed to it. And so that when it happens, I won't have to go through that absence, you know. That doesn't mean I won't grieve. I will. That's him.
Yeah, he's listening to your plan and doesn't like it,
yeah,
I think.
Anyway, what do you think? Or should I wait?
You know, it's so hard, because I know exactly where you're going, because you're afraid to be alone. That's my assumption. If I'm wrong, tell me. But
no, you're not wrong.
Okay. You have to put the welfare of your current dog first. And if his health starts to deteriorate to a point where it would be detrimental to him to have another younger dog in the household, you have to put that first and put yourself second.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And you have to be brave, because it's very painful. But you have to put that dog first.
My concern is, although your dog sounds pretty spry right now.
Uh-huh.
Trying to introduce, what kind of dog would you get? You could either get a young dog or an old dog. If you get a puppy, that puppy might have a little too much energy.
No.
For the older dog.
Right. Like a year old, maybe.
If you got an older dog, it might work and it might not. But your dog has enjoyed you for 20 years or so.
He's been an only child.
Yeah, exactly. And I can't help but think, and how big is your dog?
He weighs 20 pounds.
Whatever dog you get, they're going to set up their own relationships and their own dynamic. And probably the new dog is going to be dominant, if only because your present dog has failing health. The dog just can't help it. He'll just be dominant for that reason.
Oh, I see.
And so because of that, you know, here's your dog that's enjoyed this great status for years. Now at the end of its life is put into as a second-class citizen.
Aha. Uh-huh.
If you had done – now, don't beat yourself up, but if you had done this 10 years ago, it would have been a lot easier to integrate them.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of dogs, and it doesn't help having a lot of dogs in terms of grief when they die. It's not like, oh, gee, I've got, you know, 20 other dogs, so what? But when the dogs are older and in their last illness or whatever, we isolate them from the other dogs. We don't bring another dog into the house or anything like that. They're alone so that the dogs don't bother them. And that's my concern. If the dog is failing in health, the other dog is not going to help your dog. And as Carol said, you know, you want to put your dog, present dog, first.
Okay.
You don't have to wait forever to get another dog. You know, it's not like.
Well, I wouldn't.
Yeah, you can go in very quickly.
Uh-huh.
And this is so individual. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people like you don't want to be without a dog. Some people want to wait for a while. It's very, very individual. But in terms of how is the dog going to look at it, I would wait, as Carol says.
Okay.
Good luck.
Oh, this is good advice. I'm glad I called.
Good. I'm glad you did, too.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. And my brother, when he lost his dog, Sassy, it was within a week, I think. He said, I just, you know.
Everybody's different.
And for me, I was like, I waited.
I've seen people come in the shelter
months from and months.
The same day. And but that's them. That
so,
you know, they made their decision.
First,
it took me several months because I couldn't do it. And I know people that don't ever want to get another dog to go through that grief because it's a very unique grief.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi. I was just curious, having been watching on cable the Yukonuba Tournament of Champions from Houston, are there any dog shows in this area that are, you know, might be accessible to the public?
Springfield is what, Jim, the 20th?
I'm entered. I don't know.
Yeah. Springfield has a four-day show, the 20th. That's the Friday. That's Cold Noses. Okay. 20th. First, second, and third at the fairgrounds in Springfield. That's a really nice show.
Okay. Was this in October?
No. October. I'm sorry. Two weeks from today.
Okay.
And that's a nice show. And I think, is that Roy Jones?
I don't know.
You know,
Champagne has a show every year.
Yeah, but he's looking for one now. So
yeah, when is Champagne?
That's in June, July.
The end of June.
Okay.
But if you can look online.
Yeah.
Look up, I can't even think of the kennel clubs.
They have.
I can't remember which superintendent. Look up either, go to RoyJonesDogShows.com.
Okay, Roy Jones.
DogShows.com.
Mossbow.
Or no, it would be Onofrio.
Onofrio.
Onofrio.com, Onofrio.
Okay.
Actually, you can go to the AKC.
He could do that too.
And they have them all listed.
And they'll give you the superintendent of the show, and then you can go to that site about a week before the show. And then if you're interested in a specific breed, then you can see what time they're going to be shown and where.
If you're crazy like us, every weekend there's a show someplace.
Yeah, within driving distance.
You just
or not.
On how far you want to drive.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate the information.
You're welcome.
You're very welcome.
Bye-bye.
So Springfield, big show coming up just
now. Yeah, I didn't enter. Robbie had a weight problem.
Mm.
You know, it's like we can look in the mirror and we know our clothes don't fit. He had a weight problem.
Stone City is coming up.
Stone City's coming up, yeah.
Is that next weekend or the weekend?
I don't know. I couldn't enter any shows because he got too fat.
I think it's next weekend. I'm entered in obedience.
Stone City?
Yeah, and Robin's entered in Congress.
That's New Lenox, so that's not too bad of a drive either.
Morris, just north of Morris. Isn't that Stone City? I think it is.
I thought Stone City was new. Well, neither here nor there.
Yeah. So what do you do then when you've got to watch his calories?
This was pretty, you know, we've got such a wonderful group of people in our organization. I don't know, what are we, like almost 200 people off the number of responses I got. So I sent out a note and I said, chubby puppy. And I had taken Robbie to the vet for another reason, and he had to get on the scale, and I was he weighed 99 pounds, 99.7, I think. I don't know how that happened, so I put a note out to the list. I need some advice. Well, I got advice like you wouldn't believe. But I just went out, bought Science Diet Light Adult, put him on that, and in 3 weeks he lost 7 pounds. So we're going to get back into the 80s. But
you stopped the pretzels and the candy.
No, he didn't get pretzels
cream.
And candy. He got... He was like milk mode on demand. It didn't matter.
Oh.
You know, you want one? Sure. Here's another? Sure. Sure, I'll have three. You know, I don't know what was wrong with me.
Carol's a big-time dog trainer. You know,
I'm a nurturer.
This dog comes up and says, I want a cookie. Okay, oh. You got it.
She's often compared herself to the shoemaker. Shoemaker's children.
But, I'm wondering who's trained whom.
But I knew he was getting chubby. When I showed him at Champagne, they said he was getting chubby. The judges said, get some weight off of him. What do they know? And there, sure enough, was the evidence on the scale.
Well, why don't we talk a little bit more about that next time?
Sounds great.
Because we're out of time.
That's a good topic anyway.
Okay. And so we'll see you in November, if I'm not mistaken, November 3rd.
Okay. Sounds good.
I'll be here.
All right. Sounds good.
The next week we go to the National.
Jim Keel, Carol Lindholm. They are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. They join us once a month on the first Friday of the month to talk about dogs. This is the Afternoon Magazine. It's 9 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time. Settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thank you much, Celeste. From the Chicago Board of Trade, futures across the grains floor today finishing mostly lower than the nearby December and March wheat contracts were unchanged, but that's not really the big news for the day. The big news will come when we talk about the weekly changes. We do that on Commodity Week, which airs tomorrow morning at 11:30 Central Time, and those numbers were pretty interesting. If you take a look at the wheat numbers, they were up anywhere between 21 and 8.5 cents for the week. Corn futures up 8.5 to 3 cents. Beans were up 16.5 to 10. But that's on the weekly changes. Let's take a look at the daily change for the day. Wheat futures December contract 477 in Chicago on the high, the low at 458.5. Settlement price at $4.64. They were unchanged. March futures 487, the high, the low at 71.5. A settlement price at $4.77.5. They were unchanged as well. May futures 481, the high, the low at 72.5. Settlement price at 474.5, down 3 cents in July cents. Our July futures were off 5.5. That's the harvest month. Had a high price of 474, a low at 61, settled at 468.5. September wheat soft red 472, the high, the low at 63. Settlement price at $4.66 a bushel. And they finished 9 cents lower on the day. From the corn pit, December contract 275 and 3 quarters the high. The low at 270 and a quarter. Settlement price at 271, down 3 quarters. March futures at 285 and 3 quarters high. Low at 281 and a quarter. Settlement price at 284, up 3 quarters for the day. And the May futures, 292 and a quarter the high. The low at 288 and a half. The settlement there at 290 and a half. They were down a half. That March contract, by the way, the only gainer for the day in the corn pit. July futures, 294 the high, or rather 299 and a half the high. The low at 94. And a settlement price for the March at $2.96, they were down 2.25 today. July futures, 299.5 the high, the low at 94. Settlement price there at 296, down 2.25. And September futures, 301.5 the high, the low at 298. Settlement price at 298.25, down 2.75. December futures for next year, $3.08 the high, the low at 302.25. Settlement price at 305.5. They were 3.25 lower. And the March contract for next year, 315. This is the 2008 contract. On the high, the low at 311. Settlement price at 314.25. They were down 2.5. Let me go back and catch one other contract. That would be the May 2007. I gave you the wrong numbers, I know, because I read the July's for you. 292.25 the high, low at 288.5. Settlement price at 290.5. And they finished a half lower that for the May contract in the corn pit of 2007. December oats for the day, 216.5 the high, the low at 212 and three quarters.